Welcome to How to Trade It, the road to trading mastery. Join Casey Stubbs, a seasoned trader, as he guides you to become a profitable trader. Find actionable insights, real life stories, and strategies to boost your trading skills. Don't miss the journey to trading victory. Start listening now. Connect with us at podcast@tradingstrategyguides.com. Trading profits are just an episode away.
Hello, everyone. This is Casey Stubbs with the How to Trade It podcast. We got a new episode today, and I'm very excited to introduce Brent Kochuba, who is the founder of Spot Gamma, a financial insights company. Thanks for being on the show, Brent. How are you doing today?
I'm doing excellent. I appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk to you today.
Yeah, me too. I'm really looking forward to it because I really enjoy options. And, options are fantastic because you don't have to have a lot of risk involved to make money, right? So to make trade stocks, you might have to plop down a big chunk of cash to buy enough shares.
Right.
You're not going to make any money. But with options, it gives... kind of levels the playing field. It gives the average investor the opportunity to make some money because it doesn't cost a lot. But the problem is that because you're leveraging, then it can be a little risky as well. So there's a great opportunity, a lot of risk. People are afraid of them. They don't know what they're doing a lot of times and they get burned. So I'm excited to have you and learn a little bit about options today. So tell me about your options insights that you're providing.
Yeah, thank you. So Spot Gamma specializes in analyzing particularly the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ options complex. We write a daily note about that. And we cover the other 4,000 stocks as well in the U.S., but those indices are our focus. And what we do is we're looking at the options position, sort of where's open interest, where's trading volume. And then what we really specialize in is estimating how hedging flows, that's market makers, how their hedging flows are going to come in around those options positions. And so the general idea is that if you're an options market maker, like a Citadel or a Susquehanna or one of these other big firms you've probably heard of, you have a big book of positions, right? Because you're trading every single day. And then you need to hedge those positions by buying or selling stock and or futures. And if that volume of buying and selling stock and futures is big enough, it could really impact the market. And that's a phenomenon we believe exists and that you can actually track and sort of estimate those hedging flows and, again, how they may impact the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ.
Okay, I'm just going to unpack this because I didn't quite catch it mentally. So I have to rephrase it just for my brain to understand.
No problem.
So these big companies, these hedge funds or banks, they own a lot of options on the indexes. And they are then using stock positions to hedge those options. Is that what you said?
Yeah, that's pretty much right. So if you think about it, and it's not just with the indices, it also works with – it's also a phenomenon underlying stocks. So if you think about meme mania, right, in January of 2021 and that whole saga, there are entities out there called market makers, and the market makers, their job is to post bids and offers on the exchanges, right? This is true of stock exchanges and options exchanges. And that's what their purpose is. So they're not a hedge fund and they're not really a bank. They're a market maker. That's the entity type. So they have to electronically send out and have orders rested on all of the exchanges at all times. And odds are that when you put an order into your E-Trade system or your Robinhood system or whatever platform you may use, odds are when you go and buy an option or sell an option or buy or sell a stock, you are actually buying or selling from one of those market makers, right? They are the primary liquidity provider in our market. And in fact, Citadel alone claims that they're about 40 to 45% of total options volume. So that gives you an idea of, you know, how large they are. And so every single time that you're buying or selling, that's impacting their inventory, right? Because they have a whole bunch of options positions just from the fact that they're constantly out there having to post a bid or an offer and constantly having to trade. And so when you have a big book of options, if you're a hedge fund that has a lot of options or a market maker, right, you have risk there. You know, if the market goes up or if GameStop starts to go up, your options are changing in value and you need to hedge to sort of protect yourself there. And the primary way that you would hedge is to buy or sell shares of stock. And so the example that everyone could really grasp was back in during meme mania, and all of Wall Street Bets was buying call options, right? Because everyone thought that GameStop was going to moon, or AMC was going to moon, right? Well, somebody sold them all those calls, right? Somebody had to be on the other side of that trade. So when Wall Street Bets is buying a whole bunch of calls, is generally the market making firms like a Citadel that were selling them these calls. So if you're Citadel and you're sitting there and you're short all these calls, if GameStop goes up 20% in a day, you're feeling the pain, right? Because all those Wall Street Bets guys who bought the calls, they're super happy because the stock is going up, but Citadel's on the other side of that bet. That means they're losing. And so the way that they would hedge themselves, one of the large ways they would hedge themselves is to buy stock to hedge. So as soon as Wall Street Bets starts buying calls, Citadel's selling calls to them, but they're also buying stock as a hedge, right? Because that way, if the stock goes up, yes, they're losing money on the calls that they're short, but they're also buying stock, and that stock is gaining in value, and that's how it balances
out. When someone buys a call, that automatically creates a short position for the market maker.
That's exactly right. And so, Casey, you could think about it this way. If you're the market maker and I'm the Wall Street Bets trader here, I go, Casey, I'm going to buy, 100 AMC calls from you right now. You as a market maker, you don't have a choice, but you have to sell me that, right? Because you're on the exchange. You're obligated as per, legal reasons to post on the exchange because you're a market maker. So, bam, I bought those calls from you. Casey, you sold them and the stock starts to rip, right? I'm happy because I'm making money on that call position, right? But you're on the other side of that bet. You're losing. So how do you manage that risk, right?
Now, you're also required. So if I'm the market maker, I have to buy it back off you.
Correct. So at some point, there's two positions there, right? If the stock goes up 20% and I'm like, great, time for me to get out, then I'm going to sell you those calls at a possible high, right? So you're going to be sitting there all of a sudden, maybe having to buy those calls at the worst time because the stock's up 20%. Yeah. The other way phenomenon with options is there's options expiration, right? Where I could hold that position to expiration, which happens every week now, every Friday. And in the S&P index options, it happens every day, which is a phenomenon or something we could talk about later. But every week there's a big options expiration. And so positions are reset every Friday because of the fact that all of these contracts settle and expire. So, but you are right. It creates interesting risk as well. If all of a sudden the stock rips and I sell you those calls I bought earlier, then you're suddenly buying calls with the stock up 20% and the stock could very quickly start coming back down, in which case then you need to start very quickly changing your hedge position, right? And so you can sort of imagine that if these options positions get big enough, the amount of shares that have to get bought and sold continuously throughout the day could really start moving the market quite a bit.
Now, if you're holding the calls that you got off of me and they expire and then I have to issue you shares, am I responsible for issuing the shares as well?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the challenge with estimating that is obviously, let's say expiration is today. Well, there are, a market maker has hundreds of different options positions in GameStop, right? And so a lot of those shares, if the contracts are in the money, they'll get expired and shares will settle, right? And if the contracts are out of the money, then obviously they'll expire worthless. And so part of it is, imagine that suddenly all these contracts expire. What exposure do you have on Monday as a result, right? You could end up short or long quite a big number of shares on the day after expiration. And then you have to quickly unwind that position or adjust that position on the Monday after expiration. And so again, when you have really big options expirations, we've seen that tied to very interesting moves in the market. One of those kind of interesting moves is if you see a lot of calls build into options expiration and the stock rallies into expiration, you'll often see the stock mean revert on the Monday after expiration. So like if there's GameStop rallies really hard and there's a whole bunch of calls being bought into Friday, those call positions all expire. And then the following Monday, you'll see the stock sell off. And we think a lot of that is related to the adjustment of these hedging positions.
Interesting. Okay. Well, this is pretty cool. So I'm gonna ask you some questions about the strategy in a minute. I just got one more because I want to understand fully how, and I'm never going to understand fully, but I want to understand more on how this actually works, and then I want to get into the strategy. So, in that GameStop scenario, the market maker was getting themselves into a difficult situation, which doesn't usually happen. For number one is I hear that statistically most of options expire worthless. So that works out in the favor of the market maker. And then at one point they just shut down all the orders. And was that because the market makers had taken on so much risk that they just couldn't take any more on? And so they said, okay, we're done. Cause I remember specifically like for a day that everything was shut down.
Yeah. So what I would say is that the initial meme mania, I think most likely caught market makers offsides because no one had ever seen anything like that before, right? The magnitude of the moves, the volume coming in. And so I think that initial onset of meme mania, you know, January of 2021 probably was a little bit painful for market makers. But I think after that, they were able to adjust to this sort of new style of trading, and it probably became actually pretty profitable for them. Because they can do a whole bunch of things to make more money in these situations, right? They can widen the bid ask spread out, so that makes you pay more to trade with them. They can increase the cost of options, right, which lowers their risk. They can hedge in slightly different ways, and so they're very sophisticated entities. You know, they've all been around for a while. They have a lot of information, right, because they're trading so much. They know which way flows are going. And so I think, again, on the initial onset, they were probably caught off guard, right? Like maybe you got your first jab in on them, but after that, it was probably not so much of a fair fight. But specifically pertaining to the shutdown, the shutdown, and we've written a lot about this on spotgamma.com, but the shutdown was more related to Robinhood. And what's interesting about that is that a broker has a margin level just like any individual trader has, right? It's a little bit more sophisticated, but it's the same general idea. You're only as a broker dealer allowed to have so much exposure in a variety of different buckets. And if your exposure gets too big, right, you get a margin call from the regulators. And in this case, what was happening was Robinhood didn't do a great job of monitoring the risk that was associated with all these retail customers who had very small accounts, right? A lot of these people only had a few hundred bucks in their account. And they suddenly ended up with possibly thousands of dollars, if not tens of thousands of dollars of exposure. And so that created a lot of counterparty risk. You know, the concern was like, hey, Brent had $200 in his account. He somehow managed to get $50,000 of GameStop exposure. And if we try to settle the trade with Brent, he doesn't have the money. And there's going to be a failure there, right? So that means that whoever traded with me who may have an account at Interactive Brokers isn't going to get their money, right? And that's going to, you know, cascade into this major systemic, you know, financial systemic issue where the financial system would have a bunch of problems. So the fact that Robinhood didn't do a good job managing their risk led to the shutdown of trading.
So they
didn't have enough margin, or people
were too over leveraged. And if everybody went under, then they would have had to cover that.
That's correct. And they didn't have enough. So their capital is whatever these individual investors have in their account, by and large, right? And so, you know, that they didn't, just as you said, they didn't have enough capital to cover the potential issues that were coming their way. And so that's why it's sort of like, you got to cut these trades off, right? Because the volatility is so high, the odds of GameStop going up 1,000% are real, right? And if that happens, Robinhood's going belly up. And then there's all this counterparty risk, obviously, associated with that. And you saw this phenomenon percolate, right? Also, this year, you had the London Exchange, right? Remember when nickel went up, was it 40,000%, right? Because of that, I think there was a trader in China or something, a billionaire, right? Who was way off sides. And what did they do? Well, they broke trades, right? They unwound all these trades. And a lot of people were mad because they're like, hey, I owned nickel when it went up 40,000% and I sold it. Now you're telling me I never bought it. So, you know, there's all these, you know, ramifications of these exchanges and broker dealers not managing their risk appropriately.
Right. Yeah. And that's always a risk. I mean, trading is risky.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, you know, just two, three weeks ago now, there was the issue with the Bank of England, right? They had big interest rate shifts over there. And there was concerns that the pension funds were going to kind of go belly up because of, you know, issues there. And the Bank of England suddenly had to backstop things. So, you know, this theme is coming up a lot over the last couple of years in sort of the counterparty risk, I guess it is.
Well, thank you for that in-depth deep dive here on options make options and market maker. That was very helpful. I appreciate that. Now, what I want to know is how can we take that data that you've been tracking and how do we apply it to our trading strategy? How is that information helpful?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So if we just talk about the index options, a lot of our subscriber base at Spot Gamma is actually futures traders and people that don't trade options at all, but they use this options data, right, to help them assess the direction and or how much a market will move, right, volatility. And so some of these relationships are really pretty interesting to track. Number one, there's a lot of data out there that shows that when we move into the options expiration, which is the third Friday of every month, and there's big options positions, you will see market volatility this year shift dramatically into options expiration, right? And we'll typically sell off into options expiration. And then what will happen is when we have the expiration, the Monday after, you will see a change in trend. So I'll give you a few statistics here. You probably remember there was a big crash in December of 2018, right?
Yes.
There's the famous Christmas Eve call where Mnuchin called the banks to make sure they had capital and all that sort of thing. Well, what's interesting to us from a positional perspective is that low was the day after options expiration in December. So that December options expiration was one of the biggest expirations we've ever seen at the time. And what happened is a whole bunch of put options expired the day before Christmas Eve, right? And when those put options expired, the dealer hedges that are in place to protect dealers if the market goes down, or market makers, you know, when the market goes down, they're short stock and they're short futures. So when all those puts expire, they can buy stock and they can buy futures back the following day, right? And we think that's why the market rallied that Monday after, not because of Mnuchin. Another example, March of 2020, the low of the market was the day after options expiration, wherein huge put options expired again on Friday, and then on Monday, the stock market rallies massively. And you can see this phenomenon occur over and over and over again. And so knowing the position of the dealers and market makers and when those positions are going to expire, oftentimes the market will mean revert, right? And so you'll see oftentimes the volatility will accelerate into expiration and then kind of reverse. And so knowing the timing, again, that third Friday is really valuable. To know that there's going to be a change in trend around these expirations. And again, the third Friday is the big mark there. And then the second thing, which is interesting, is the relationship of implied volatility to how the market moves. Now, implied volatility is kind of a bigger term here, but if you think about what the VIX is, right, everybody knows the VIX and they call it the fear gauge. But what the VIX actually is it monitors, or it's a reflection of the level of implied volatility for options in the S&P 500. So said another way, how much do people think the S&P 500 is going to move? That's what the VIX is reflecting. Now, the natural hedge when implied volatility goes down is for dealers to start to buy back shares of stock, right? And if implied volatility goes up, that means dealers are going to start to sell stock. And so what you end up getting is when the VIX goes down, the stock market tends to go up. And when the VIX goes up, the stock market tends to go down, right? And the link of that is this hedging flow, right? Because if you think about it, what does higher implied volatility mean? Well, what does it mean when the VIX goes up? That means there's fear in the market, right? And if there's fear in the market, people are probably buying put options. And put options are probably gaining in value because people go, uh-oh, we're scared. We think the market's going to go down. So Casey, again, if you're the market maker and I'm buying puts from you, you're short puts. Well, how do you hedge yourself in that scenario? You start to sell stock and sell futures, and that makes the market go down, right? Now, if the fear subsides, right, and the VIX comes down, then put values start losing money. I say, oh no, Casey, I want to buy those puts. I want to sell you those puts. I don't want these anymore. Market's not going to crash. So suddenly, Casey, you're in the opposite position where instead of you selling puts and having to sell stock, you're buying puts and now buying stock back, right? And that makes the market shift higher. So this is all fairly complex, right? But what you can get is this relationship between the way that the VIX is moving and implied volatility is moving and how you would expect the hedging flows to come into the market. So again, you can see and you can watch the VIX start to trend lower in very short time frames, and you can watch the stock market move up, and you can also watch, you know, the inverse happen. So VIX up tends to send the market down, and VIX down tends to send the stock market up. because of this relationship. And this relationship is particularly interesting now ahead of the FOMC, which is tomorrow. That's 11-2. And we have the VIX is pretty high right now, right? Because people are a little bit worried about what the Fed is going to say tomorrow. And if they start to ease, well, that VIX is going to collapse and that will end up really spurring the stock market quite higher through these hedging flows.
Okay. Okay.
Lot to unpack.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah. I, you know, when you said it was complicated, you probably figured that out because of the blank stare on my face. I'm really tracking. I think you did an amazing job of explaining it. It really simplified it and break it down. There was just a lot. So I really enjoyed that. I'm trying to think of the key questions that I have. So I have a lot. So we might have to go over time today.
Yeah, so, well, that's right. So there's really two, there's two categories to watch, right? One is the third Friday of the month, right? So November 18th is the next big options expiration. If the market is rallying sharply into that day, you would want to possibly play mean reversion or the market selling off after that expiration. Because the idea is that a whole bunch of call positions will build into expiration. Then those calls will expire and the market will revert.
Okay, okay, okay. So today, let's talk about today. And I usually don't talk about specific market stuff on the podcast because this will be published who knows how long and from today. Right. And people might be listening to it 5 years from now. But it will help me understand today because today the market was opened. We're talking the S&P 500. It opened high, right?
Yep.
And then it immediately went down. And it went down pretty heavy.
Yeah, we lost about 70 points in the S&P, right, in about 10 minutes.
Okay, so I was trading that, and I'm not using your options strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just doing it because I was seeing a resistance level, and I saw the price action was getting tired, and it crossed below a couple key levels, and I'm like, okay, this is going short. I took the trade. Great. No big deal. Normal trading. But what I'm trying to figure out is on your side, taking your strategy and using it for mine to help me, because that's what you say a lot of people are doing. So did you see, what was your big clues for today? Was there options that were expiring and was the VIX was higher and that means the market's going to go lower?
Hello, this is Casey, and I wanted to take a minute to tell you about my new book that just came out. It's called Complete Trading System. This is my 25 years of trading experience, sharing everything that I have learned in how to make a profit from the markets. You're going to learn about how to find the right instruments to trade, how to find a trend, how to get started as beginners. You're going to learn about how to get the right mindset, and you're going to be able to put it all together to create a trading system of your own that will work for you. I highly recommend that you try it out. Just click the link right now. It's called Complete Trading System. It's available on Amazon. Thank you. Go ahead and check it out. I think you're going to love it.
Yeah. So if you read our daily note, what we say is that when you look at the way that options are positioned in the market today, there are a lot of calls positioned. The biggest call open interest is in the 3,900 to 3,950 area. And so what that tells us is as the market goes up, dealer hedging flow has to start selling shares of stock and selling futures as a natural hedge. So that overhead band, right, from 3,900 to 3,950 is resistance.
Okay, and they're selling, you said they're selling futures and also what? SPY?
Spiders or Qs.
Okay.
Spider, QQQ.
And also futures contracts as well. They're doing both.
What was the last part?
Well,
I'm sorry.
You were saying that, I don't know if I misheard, they're selling stock.
Yep.
Spiders or QQQ or whatever.
Right. Yep.
Are they also dealing with futures as well? Are they selling futures contracts?
Right, 100%.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And so when you look at our levels for today, we said the big resistance level is 3950, and the big support level is 3850. That is sort of the band, right, based on where open interest is. And the idea is that around open interest, there are big hedging flows that have to come into the market. And when I say hedging flows, I'm meaning buying and selling of stock. And so at 3950, you could see that every time the market goes up there, traders come and they start to sell calls, right? And that means that the natural hedge for dealers who are buying those calls is to start to sell futures or sell shares of stock. And that is what pressures the market lower in our models.
Okay.
And conversely, we move down to 3850, and that's where we see traders start to buy calls, right? They unwind that position that they were selling, right? They're selling calls at 3,900 to 3,950, and they're buying those calls back at 3,850. And you can see these positions at the start of day. So our note comes out around 6 a.m. with where the big open interest levels are and how we think the futures are, and how we think hedging flows are tied to those.
The open interest was, were those open interest levels right at where you were seeing the resistance, or were they below that?
Yeah, so there's open interest in the S&P at basically every strike, right? It's all, you know, if you look at the open interest, it lines up every 5 or 10 handles. But the biggest area of open interest is 3,900 in the SPX and 3,950. And so what happens is when we open into that band, you're opening into this area where you know dealers and market makers are incentivized to start selling stock and selling futures to naturally hedge themselves. So without a real reason to buy, right? Because what long only investor is going to really, or swing trader wants to buy above that area the day before the Fed, right?
Yeah.
Not too many.
No. That's crazy.
Right. You don't want to stick your head out there or your neck out there right now, right? So the most predominant flow in the market, if we get up into that area, is going to be dealers selling futures and selling shares. When I say dealers, I mean dealers and market makers. The term is kind of interchangeable. They're going to start selling futures and selling stock in order to hedge themselves. In other words, like if you consider everything in equilibrium, when you move above 3,900, they got to start selling futures to push the stock market back into this equilibrium area, which is between 3,850 and 3,900, if that makes sense. So it's the same flow now when we breach 3,850 to the downside that market makers and dealers are going to start buying based on the positioning. And that's likely to move the market back up. Again, you know, can't have this conversation too much in real time, but I would say the S&P right now is at 3,855. And so, you know, our note is like, look, we think we're going to close back towards 3,900 because of the hedging flows.
Right. So just in summary, you're looking at the expirations, you're looking at the open interest, and you're looking at the VIX. And those are really key data points that you are studying.
That's exactly right. So just to give you another, again, I know we're not in real time here, but the market sold off, the S&P sold off at 39.10 on the open, right? And we hit a low of 38.45, right? So that's a good 65, 70 handle move over the course of the morning. So, you know, it's right around noon Eastern time. What you're seeing now, right now, is you're seeing the VIX, which made a high of 26.40. The VIX right now is 25.85, right? So the trend in the VIX is now coming down. So what is that telling you? Well, number one, it's telling you that there's not much fear in the market, right? Because if that crash, that 70 handle move was really bringing people out, say, oh no, I don't know what's going on. I'm really worried about the stock price action here. Casey, what would you do? You would probably buy put options to hedge your portfolio, right? If you're scared that the world's going to end, you're going to buy puts.
Yeah.
And if people were buying puts, the VIX would start to go up. Full stop. Like VIX is going to go up. And that's your signal that the market has not bottomed
yet.
But in this case, we've hit 3850 and the VIX is starting to go down. So this, when the VIX is going down, it's telling us that people are no longer buying puts, right? The VIX going down is fear coming off, which tells me that the market's going to start to move higher.
Which to me seems a little crazy with FOMC tomorrow.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the problem in this market is the amount of volatility, you know, obviously is so high.
Yeah.
If you look at realized volatility, which is a measure of how much the market's moved over the last 30 days, we're at a sustained level of volatility now that we have not seen in 10 or 15 years, right? Generally, what happens is we have a lot of volatility like this in the midst of a market crash, right? So, you know, the pandemic or Volmageddon or whatever else it may be, like market crashes, the Fed comes out and says, I got your back. And then everyone just buys stock and we go back to normal, right? But this year has not been that at all. We have these kind of cascading series of issues and we're all sitting here waiting for the Fed to say like, hey, don't worry guys, like I got your back now. We can all just like head back into stocks and go about our day.
Right.
We're not getting that. And so the markets continue to be extraordinarily volatile where, look, a 70 handle move, which is what we had this morning, like both you and me are sitting here like, yeah, just another 70 handle move, right? Like we're not panicked.
Right.
I think like last year, if you got a 70 handle move, we'd be like, what the fuck?
I mean,
excuse me. What the heck is going on?
Big move. I mean, I was thinking that, that, you know, that could be the start of a more prolonged bear move.
Yeah. You know, the other interesting thing I would note, and this is one of the things we wrote about our subscriber note this morning, is if you look at the value, the values of puts relative to calls, right? We call this skew.
Uh-huh.
But if you measure that, you can just, you know, make a metric out of it. If you look at it, the skew price right now is near an all-time sort of high. What does that mean? That means that the price of puts relative to calls tells us that nobody wants puts and everybody wants calls right now. And if you were in a crash scenario or in a market that people are really worried, you would have the opposite image, right? You'd have puts very high in price relative to calls, right? Because again, if everyone thinks the market's going to crash, you're going to buy put options, not calls. And so what's really weird to have that position, because the FOMC comes out tomorrow, and if they go, look, we're gonna hold on to this 75 bips thing, we're not backing off at all, the stock market, the S&P could easily slide down to 3,600, right? We think within 2 days, if the Fed does not accommodate us, we'll be down 300 handles in the S&P in the blink of an eye based on options positioning dynamics. So what we mentioned to our subscribers is like, look, put options are really cheap today. Like, don't wait tomorrow for the Fed to say mm-hmm. something, because then puts won't right. be very cheap anymore.
Right.
It's buy, you know, sometimes you just buy things that are cheap because they're cheap.
Right.
Right. Maybe you don't believe the Fed is going
to high. It's the risk to reward, right? So you
100%.
You spend a couple hundred bucks on some puts because they're cheap. Big deal. I mean, you lose a couple hundred bucks if you're wrong, but if you're right, you could make thousands.
Are you tired of feeling lost in the world of trading and investing? Get informed and inspired with the Talking Trading podcast. I'm Louise Bedford, and I'll help you navigate the markets like a pro. Tune in each week and subscribe now at talkingtrading.com.au or on your favorite podcast app, or check out the link in the show notes. Talking Trading, this is how traders excel.
That's exactly right. And a lot of times into these events, you go into these events where if the VIX is like 35 or 40, that's telling you that put options are extremely expensive. And you almost cannot make money when you buy a put at that level, right? Because if the VIX is at 35 and you buy a put, you are literally betting on the market going limit down in order to make any money.
Right.
And so the similar thing happens like with AMC or GameStop when there's call mania. The prices of the calls get so expensive that you almost can't make money by buying those, right? You know, you may buy there were times where, you know, you were paying an implied vol of say 200 for a call, which basically means the stock has to double in the next like 5 days for you to make any money. Like, it's almost impossible.
And that's been that's a hidden danger that most investors don't know about, right? Because like, you automatically assume the call, you don't know about call pricing, and you see the stocks going up and your call's not making any money, and you're like, what is this?
That's 100% right. And that's one of the reasons we think markets stop crashing, is because, you know, when things are really scary and the VIX is at 50, 75, 80, right? You can't buy protection anymore. Like, it's too late, right? And so the value of those puts gets so expensive, and it entices people to start selling that protection, right? Because you go like, look, if I can't make money by buying this contract, then I should sell it probably, right? Like, look, if my house value suddenly went to like $3 million tomorrow, like, my house is only worth $500,000. I'm going to sell you my house. Great.
Right.
In case you want to buy another level,
place it's yours. To go live.
Yeah. So, you know, that phenomenon exists. And a lot of times traders overpay for options. And that's one of the big ways that market makers can protect themselves, right? They always have to place a bidder offer out there, but they can just make the price of the contract so expensive that either A, if you buy it, you're going to lose money almost guaranteed. Nothing is guaranteed, obviously, but, you know, the edge is way against
right.
you. Or other guys come out and go like, oh, that's super expensive. I'll sell that. And that takes the pressure off, you know? So another example, brief one here, and I know we're kind of going over time, so I'll be quick. But if GameStop yesterday at one point was up 25%, it opened at the stock last night or 2 days ago was at like 25, right? And the stock opened at 38. If you look at the volume that traded yesterday in GameStop, it was all call positions, right? So most of the time you'd say, look, if the stock goes up 20%, I want to buy puts to bet that the stock is going to go down. But in this case, what happens is the calls get so expensive that the best way to actually short the stock or bet that the stock is going to go down is to sell call options. And that's because when the stock goes down, you make money off of basically that call demand drying up. So what happens is, you know, kind of like the VIX goes down when the market goes up. It's the inverse in GameStop in that situation where the GameStop VIX, quote unquote, will go down when the market goes down, right? It's because the call demand dries up. So the, in other words, the smart traders bet that if I want to short GameStop, I'm going to sell call positions, not buy puts.
Right.
And that's a dynamic of how options are valued.
Well, this has been amazing. I've really enjoyed this, Brent, and I've learned a lot, and this is valuable stuff. So tell me a little bit about your insights that you're providing. Do you have indicators that you provide? You mentioned reports. Tell me a little bit about everything that you guys offer here.
Yeah, thank you so much. So over at spotgamma.com, we offer some real-time indicators. We have something called the Hero, which monitors this options volume coming into and out of the market in real time. We have trading levels. So a lot of our subscribers are futures traders. So we integrate with a lot of the most popular futures traders platforms like NinjaTrader and Bookmap, things like that. And so people use our daily levels, right, for support and resistance lines. We have a lot of options traders, obviously, like to trade, you know, volatility strategies and things like that. But you can use this data to just purely trade stock, right? You don't have to trade options. And then we write a daily note. So that note comes out before the market where we lay out everything happening in the options market. A lot of people like to use us because it's important to monitor the options market now, right? But you don't want to spend the time to do it yourself. So you kind of outsource that to us so that you know when the big expirations are coming. How are people positioned? How might, you know, dealer hedging affect my position? And so we set up a code here for everybody to get a 2 week extra free trial. If you use code HTTI50, you just put that in a checkout and you can get an extra long free trial, basically, is what that provides you, and get a feeling for how this options data can help you.
2 weeks is definitely plenty of time, I think. I mean, there's a lot to learn, but if you're in the markets every day and you're trading and you're using it, you're going to learn it. So, everyone that's listening, that's a 2 week free trial at spotgamma.com. And if you go in and subscribe for the trial, what you do is you just put in the code HTTI50 and you'll get the 2 weeks. So thanks for doing that, that special offer, Brent. And for everybody that's listening, I think it's, you know, it's 2 weeks. Give it a shot. You know, if you're trading, it doesn't have to be the indexes, but if you are trading the indexes, you will definitely want to get this additional information, give you an edge here.
Yeah, Casey, I would just add that I know a lot of these concepts are probably complicated for a lot of people who aren't exposed to options. And so we spend a lot of time on educating you as we're sort of giving you our analysis, right? So there's a lot of people who subscribe just to get sort of the education and the insights around sort of how options can impact the market. And so, you know, yes, you're getting market research, but you're getting what we hope is a great education along the way.
Yeah. And I appreciate that as well, because I got a good education today. And, you know, I've been trading the S&P 500 quite a bit. And so I've done pretty well. And so, great. And that's good. Good for me. Yay. You're always trying to get better and get more insight.
Yeah.
Right. And so if this is another tool that could give me an additional check, you know, I got my daily checklist. Every time I'm looking at taking a trade, I'm like, okay, I got this check. And now I just got one more checklist, because to me, every piece of data that you add to your trade making decision is a good thing.
Right. And to your point, I would just, last thing I'll say is that, you know, we're an overlay for your existing strategy, right? So whatever your existing strategy is, being in options or futures, our goal is to show you, or hopefully, you know, portray when the options market's going to be the tail that wags the dog, right? So when are our levels most important? When are these flows most important? And so to your point, you know, add us to your checklist, overlay us onto your existing strategy, and hopefully it helps to supplement and explain a lot of the market movement that maybe seemed to not make a lot of sense before. That's one of the big feedback we get. Like, I never understood why the market did X, Y, and Z, maybe around expiration, right? But now I totally get it. And I can amend my strategy on those days, that, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, we're always learning. And so the more that we get to know the markets and adjust our execution, the better. Well, that is going to be it for this episode, Brent. Thank you so much. You did a great job sharing, and I appreciate the insight that you're bringing to the markets.
Thanks so much for having me, Casey. I really appreciate it.
All right. Well, that's it for today's episode. Make sure you go to spotgamma.com and get your free trial. It's HTTI50. That will be in the description.
Thanks for tuning in to another insightful episode of How to Trade It with Casey Stubbs. We hope you found today's discussion valuable and inspiring. Remember, the road to trading mastery is a continuous one, and your commitment to learning and growing as a trader is the key to your success. If you have any questions, comments, or topics you'd like us to cover in future episodes, please reach out to us at podcast@tradingstrategyguides.com. Keep listening, keep learning, and keep trading your way to victory. Until next time.